Hey, I'm back again with another AEW Dynamite review. Two in a row. I think I am getting back into the swing of things. Hello, I'm Warren Hayes, Mr. Warren Hayes, to you. This is all in relation to my recovery, right? That this is the setup that I'm trying to do here. If you don't know what I'm talking about, there's a live stream where I walk through everything. I'm not going to rehash this every time, but there is a nice little live stream where I talk about where I've been over the past month. You know, long story short, I had heart surgery and I'm getting better. That's the long and short of it. I've been trying out some things here, and we're back into the podcast, more of the podcast format today, where we're going to review last night's AEW Dynamite. The March 13, 2024 edition of Dynamite, if we are being precise. But otherwise, like on the YouTube channel, I've been dipping my toes, getting back into analysis, opinions, doing little bits of I guess, notes of interest, things that I feel like I want to talk about or feel that I'd like to weigh in on. Or analyze. I did that a bit this week. So without getting into a full 3-hour podcast like I usually do, this is what I've been doing. So if you can't get enough Warren Hayes, you might want to check out the YouTube channel at youtube.com/Mr. Warren Hayes and pick up on some of my little thoughts here. I talked about the Chris Jericho defeating Titan, and gave some thoughts on the identification that popped up that happened earlier this week, that the identification of corporate officers 1, 2, 3, and 4 from the Janelle Grant case against WWE. That's all on my channel right now. I think the format doesn't quite apply itself well to podcasts. So if you're listening to this on the audio side of things, you haven't seen these go by. But again, like, since they're just like shorter, like very encapsulated thoughts about a thing, a particular subject, I feel it doesn't really apply to the more traditional podcast outfits. You know, it works well for YouTube. It works tremendous for YouTube, don't get me wrong. Look, you just head on over there, youtube.com/Mr. Warren Hayes. I think now we're just supposed to say I'm on YouTube at Warren Hayes, Mr. Warren Hayes, because the ads now work on YouTube as well. That's a thing as well. So, yeah, look, whichever way you want to go about doing it, I'm around, I'm doing stuff, is what I'm saying. I'm not dead yet. I'm getting back into the swing of things. But, and just like today, I'm back with another AEW Dynamite review, which I'm obviously very excited to talk about. It was the big business show. AEW Dynamite, big business. And the business was big, I guess, if we want to start off on that end. At least we're assuming the business was big, and not mind-bogglingly huge, but big. Look, but as I'm recording this right now, I'm recording this on March 14, and it is late morning. There's still confusion around the actual gate number, right? Dave Meltzer, yesterday reported that, according to, as he noted, multiple sources, according to his multiple sources, over 9,400 tickets were distributed. Whereas WrestleTix earlier in the day was reporting a much lower count, like we were in the 7,000s, right? There was like maybe a 1,200 ticket difference between the two, which is significant, right? If we're talking about a 500 seat difference, well, that's not the end of the world. But, you know, when we're talking about like 1,200, 1,300, that's a significant disparity. The WrestleTix did imply that the count could come up once he was done collecting, the data, essentially, and that probably things would even out. But as it stands right now, we know there was a lot of people in the building. We saw a lot of, at least they were supplied on, on Twitter and whatnot. People were, X formerly Twitter, I should say. A lot of people were taking pictures of the arena, which looked, had a lot of people seated in there. But look, it does seem that we're inching towards more 9,400 count than anything lower, which would mean that big business would have done better business than the Blood and Guts Dynamite from last year, July 19 Blood and Guts Dynamite, which did 8,956 tickets distributed. So that was kind of a measuring stick that a few people were using to see, well, can Mercedes Moné can she get to that level? Can she hit that high? And a lot of people were doubting that because, ticket sales weren't spectacular. WrestleTix wasn't necessarily reporting a tremendous trend, uptrend of ticket sales, but the Blood and Guts show last year, this show this year did a lot of same day walk-ups. So it really appears that trend in Boston anyway, is that people will wait till the very last minute to pick up tickets to go to the show. Because as I said, as we got closer and closer to the show, ticket sales seemed to have plateaued just a little over 7K. A little over 7,000 tickets distributed. So, which leads to the conversation, right? Yeah, obviously leads to the conversation. Was it a good strategy to pull the CM Punk first dance strategy that Tony Khan had done for Punk's big return to wrestling? I personally speaking, this is just me, and thankfully I was able to put this on I was not able to put this on record because all of this was going down while I was flat on my back dying. I'm exaggerating, but I was flat on my back and I wasn't dying anymore. I feel like the connection that CM Punk has to Chicago is special, and it's much more ingrained into CM Punk's personality, right? He will never not be a draw in Chicago, right? Look at what they're doing, they being WWE. What I think next week's Raw's in Chicago, something like that, or the week after. Like, there's one of these Raw's before WrestleMania that's in Chicago. What do? They put out a press release. They put out a little signal boost saying, hey, CM Punk's going to be in Chicago. What do you think is going to happen? They're going to sell more tickets, right? So I think you could much more easily get away with not announcing the name, filling out the United Center, with just on the promise of CM Punk, just on the speculation, and that worked. Whereas, and this is not to say that I don't think, Mercedes Moné is a big star, but Moné's connection to Boston, while it's there, is not as ingrained. It's not as, you know, it's not as much part of the fabric of Mercedes Moné or Sasha Banks or, you know, whatever iteration. It's not as intertwined as it is with CM Punk. So, you know, I thought it was a gamble to begin with, right? But listen, if they do over 9,400 tickets for this show, it's a success. Like, we're splitting hairs at this point. Me going, should they have done this? You know, we're splitting hairs. 9,400 is a good house. Especially for AEW standards, right? I know this is one of the best AEW non-pay-per-view houses that they've had in months, and maybe the best. That I'm not sure on, but it's absolutely one of the top non-pay-per-view houses that they've done, based on the strength of the card and the surprise of the expectation, the promise of Mercedes Moné showing up. But I can't, and you know, of course there's complimentary tickets. You know, this is what everyone wants to try and break this down and turn this into something that it's not. Well, they gave out tickets for free. Every fucking show gives out tickets for free. What do you think WWE does, you know, doesn't have people that they want to give out tickets to? They had a bunch of cowboys on Raw this week. They had some cowboys for some cowboy show, right? If I'm not mistaken, the cowboys didn't pay for the tickets. What are we doing? You know, it's like, but they're counted in the attendance. Like, you know, like, of course there's going to be comps here. You know, there's people saying, oh, the gate was, what is it, like about 320,000 or something like that. And, oh, what a failure. Like, you know, there's always going to be these instances of people who are going to try and break it down and try to make it not come across as a success because it's not doing the business that a 40-year-old company has, you know, because it doesn't have the because it's not doing those types of numbers, then it's absolutely a failure. And you know that when reasonable, intelligent human beings know that there are all different levels of success and that you don't have to be number one to be a success. Anywho. So yeah, you know, I mean, this show did well. But you know, maybe just to close up should Tony have advertised Mercedes Moné instead of teasing her, right? Maybe. I don't know. We'll never know at this point. At this point, it's just pure speculation. But what if Tony had put her on posters, had put her on advertisements? What if she, what if they had banners like outside the TD Garden where you had Mercedes Moné there and Moné, excuse me. And she, you know, where she out there and you have flyers and, you know, she's a recognizable face to all wrestling fans. You know, a lot of us, especially the, you know, those of us who do, hang out online and are really into it, you know, dare I say hardcores, you know, we understood what Tony was doing, right? The boss references, big business, Boston, you know, all right. We got it. You know, we saw that coming. At some point, only those hooked on copium we're dealing with the fact that we're still saying, well, there's a chance Sasha might show up at WrestleMania to help Bayley kind of thing. You know? And I know a lot of us fans pick that up, but what about the fans who don't spend their time online following wrestling or didn't necessarily pick up the details, or more importantly, don't watch AEW, but maybe would have been like, hey, I know her. That's Sasha Banks. What is she doing? Maybe that could have generated into more sales. Like at this point, I don't know. But I kind of like this idea of Tony Khan bringing in these, when he brings in these tremendous, these very big North American superstars, that he does this, oh, you know, it's coming, you know, and doesn't take his audience for idiots. And it's like, I know you're going to pick up on this. I know you're going, and this will be part of the conversation over the past, over the next few weeks, because it kind of did. Like it does this part where it's also part of a conversation for weeks and weeks and weeks, where people are like, oh, you know, Mercedes Moné, I guess she's coming in, and so on and so forth. You know, I can't tell you, I can't say with certainty which is the best avenue, right? I just, maybe call me a traditionalist when it comes to promoting wrestling shows on that front, but you know, I feel you got the names, you have the names that people want to see. You put them on your posters, you let them know they're going to be there. That to me, is it just me, or is that like a, I feel like that's a good way to sell tickets. And boy, are they hoping to sell tickets for Dynamite next week in Toronto. And they hope that that you all tune in, because they're laying it on thick next week. That's another big show. But I mean, look, here's the thing. They should, like, on a night where on a Dynamite, which for all intents and purposes should be a big show and should have lots of eyeballs on, you should be, and maybe even some new eyeballs, who knows, you should be promoting your next week's show. You should be getting in there and saying, hey, by the way, tune in next week, because look at all this great stuff we have next week. Which makes sense. Anyway, it's a good gate. Lots of people. This is, it's a success. It's just, it, like, there's no, if we are indeed talking about 9,400, it went above and beyond expectations. It beat their previous record. And it's a feather in the cap of Ms. Monet as well. Who comes in and, you know, she's a draw. This is what it indicates, and don't get your signals tangled here. This is what it meant. But let's get talking about the show itself. Of course, like we mentioned, it's the March 13th edition of AEW Dynamite Big Business from the TD Garden at Boston, Massachusetts. Look, Renee Paquette is backstage, and this is how we open the show. She's backstage, and a Maybach rolls up. I'm assuming, I think that's how you pronounce it, right? But it rolls up, but we don't see who's in it, right? And look, Maybach is a. It's owned by Mercedes-Benz, right? So, you know, right there, you're like, oh, okay. See, and I know shit about cars, but at least I know that. I don't even know how to pronounce it correctly. Kia, is that how you pronounce that brand? Kia? Toyota? Okay, that's enough. Anyway, so then after that, we cut to the arena. The crowd is hype. Music hits. CEO Mercedes Monet comes out to roars from the crowd. And not only roars, but her theme song was designed for the audience to chant along with the CEO. And boy, oh boy, the audience just hopped on that, right? Just jumped right in. They didn't even dip their toe in. They didn't even ask previously, to the lifeguard. It's not as if they went up to the lifeguard and said, hey, can I dive? How deep is it here? Can I dive in or should I go? No. They just dove right in. They, didn't care about the safety of their necks. This analogy is going too far. But they went absolutely nuts for this and they bought into it. And look, I like this song. I like it a lot better than than her New Japan theme that she had. Dun, 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 money, dun, 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 money, dun, 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 money. That didn't quite work for me. This feels like a big song. It has big room feel to it. The chant along thing, which is smart. I think that of course the sing along thing, the sing along aspect is, a little. I criticize WWE wrestlers who lean too much into that, and and WWE fans, that's all they want to do. They want to chant along. They want to sing along to Seth Rollins' thing and do the whoa part, but it does help them get over, and it's a smart tactic. Plus, it also discourages the audience from chanting anything else because you're giving them something new to chant. You're giving them something not just new, just right in their face. You're like, you have to be chanting this, right? So maybe this was also by design, I would assume, to keep them from chanting anything else, Sasha Banks, anything else that could get them into hot water, right? So I liked it. There was even some Beethoven Symphony Number 9 in there as well. I liked it. I thought this was good. I enjoyed it, look. I'm going to do this one more time later on in this program. but I keep telling you, I know it probably annoys a lot of you, but I cannot not point out WWE isms without just raising a little flag. Hey guys, designing a theme song for people to sing along to is very, very much a WWE thing. It works, don't get me wrong. As long as this does not become commonplace, that it's not, I know there's Judas. Don't worry, I get it, okay? But as long as it doesn't become a thing for everyone, that suddenly every theme song in AEW has to have like the sing-along component, I'll be okay. That's fine. Pro wrestling is a great big bowl of fruit salad. And, there's a lot of different fruit in there. And sometimes you get a grape and you're like, nice, juicy, sweet grape. The ones I'm talking about. Sometimes you'll get a strawberry that's in season. And oh, this is great. Some pineapple. And then you'll get cantaloupe. As long as there's not too much cantaloupe, right? But a lot of times, you do end up having these fruit salads. And there's way too much cantaloupe because, and cantaloupe stinks. And I guess it's inexpensive to add in there. At this point, I'm like, add in some banana instead. I can do without the cantaloupe, right? Because cantaloupe is it's bad fruit. It's bad fruit. So, If you want to, you know, if you have too much cantaloupe, well, a little bit of cantaloupe amongst the, you know, the real stars of the show, of the fruit bowl, then yeah, I'm okay with it. I can handle a couple of slices, a couple of bites of cantaloupe. That's fine. I'm not going to let good food go to waste, but, you know, if you like dump, you know, you give it to me and I'll, you know, practically all I have is cantaloupe. 65% of the bowl is cantaloupe and I have like a couple of blueberries in there, which blueberries are fine, but you know, just like a sprinkle and you have like, you know, one, like a pineapple wedge, you know, like, this sucks. This is not good fruit bowl. That's kind of like pro wrestling. I'm hungry. She gets on the mic. She says she's home. She gets welcome home chants from the audience. Thank you for sticking with me, of course, you know, all that good stuff. She breaks down her history. Basically, talking about how when she was 13 years old, she dropped out of school to take care of her brother. Then decided to join Chaotic Wrestling when she basically didn't know much. She never wrestled. She weighed like 90 pounds. And she talks that, so that's all cool. Breaking out of, and then she talks about wanting to fight everyone in the locker room and her unfinished business with Willow Nightingale. That she's all elite. And interesting to note that despite the fact that there were no video packages, that there were there was no weekly buildup to this, seems to me like people in that building knew what was going on with Willow Nightingale, because when she mentioned the unfinished business with Willow Nightingale, we got some boos, which is fine. You're in Boston. You're in her territory. That's that. You know, that's what you should. Local heel Willow Nightingale, sure. That's something I feel we've been missing over the past few months. When AEW did the local heel stuff or the local babyface stuff. Anyway, don't want to get too much off topic here. We're practically 30 minutes into the review and I haven't talked about a single match yet. Welcome to the Mr. Warren Hayes Show. Look, I thought this was a spot-on debut. It's as spot-on as you can get, quite frankly. The music, I thought, was very good. I thought her look was tremendous. And the promo was probably the best she's ever done. That's what I was chatting about in our little group chats, and I think I may have even put it up on Blue Sky. I don't remember. You know, I have so many thoughts. They just go out there. I don't recall everything I say. What? You think I'm some kind of magician? Remembering things I've said? Golly gee. She, I'm on record with this over the years that I've been doing this. You know, Monet, Sasha Banks, her promo work has never been her strong suit, right? And anytime anyone asked me, well, who do you think is the best of the four horsewomen? I'm going to say, are we talking about in-ring work? And they say, yes. Well, I say Sasha Banks. Like, that's inevitable every time. Monet is, I think she's the best out of the four. But with always the caveat that her promos have never been her strong suit. They're always a little stilted. But this was probably her best. Because it was sincere. Because it was heartfelt. I think she is legitimately happy to be back on American TV. I think she's legitimately happy to be getting a substantial money contract. I know I would. That would motivate me. And but you know, it didn't have that stilted feel sometimes that her promos have. I'm sure you know what I mean. And I, you know, I think this is an objective, and I don't feel like I'm burying anyone here. I don't think I'm burying Monet here. Her promos have never been her strong suit. Here, I thought it was tremendous. I thought she was very good. She worked well with the audience. Look, and if this is the beginning of her collaboration with Jennifer Pepperman and in AEW, well, I'm all for it. You know, the Jennifer Pepperman, of course, if in case you don't recall, was a former WWE writer, and a former soap opera writer, Emmy Award winner, daytime Emmy. Look, she's got all sorts of accolades, and she ended up in WWE, and she wrote a lot for Sasha. Like, she was kind of Sasha's girl while everyone was all happy in WWE. And then Monet leaves, and Pepperman leaves the company, leaves WWE. And this is very, very recently. This was just like about a month ago. She leaves WWE, and then a week later, she's hired by AEW. I believe I talked about this on my return stream. I don't know. Look, it doesn't matter. But she comes back. She's hired by AEW. She's given a position like vice president of creative, whatever. And then next thing you know, like the thing, like it sort of becomes clear. Oh, Pepperman came into AEW. Sasha's coming into AEW. Or Monet's coming in. So, you know, this does feel like Mercedes Monet using her leverage to get her girl in, you know, someone that she trusts to work on her creative, essentially, right? Someone that she had a good working relationship. This was well established back in the WWE days. Not unlike Dwayne Johnson and Brian Gerwitz, where he goes back to WWE and brings Gerwitz with him to write his stuff. Not unlike that. So, and good for Monet for doing that, to have the leverage to do that, to, you know, bring in your people. That's fantastic. And so Pepperman's there. And again, I was much more weary than a lot of people were, you know, and I still maintain this. You know, the best way for AEW to remain original, to be its own thing and to have its own voice, is to not depend on creative coming from the other place, coming from WWE. So the more WWE people you hire, the more you're running a risk of suddenly your company starting to sound like WWE. That's what I talked about. That's what I mentioned when Pepperman was brought in, and I still have... I'm still reserving judgment, but as a first outing of the Monet Pepperman era here, if you want to call it, I have nothing bad to say. I thought this was very good. And if the collaboration is on this level, and we keep going down this path, I have no issues with it at all. This is going to be very good. Anyway, look, she seemed happy, Monet. She seemed tremendously happy to be there. And already you have the dorks online calling this a failure again. You know, failure at the box office, failure here. And how Mercedes Monet is ruined. But, you know, I hope that you all have the foresight to completely ignore that, to mute, block, you know, just get rid of these people. Because these are the same individuals who are going to flip and say WWE will save her once she returns, right? Because again, you know, when Monet eventually does go back to WWE, that's what these people are going to say. Finally, she's back home. WWE saved her career because it was down the tubes in AEW or whatever. That being said, it might, you know, like it might go dramatically terribly for her in AEW. I don't think so. Not doesn't feel like that, like it's going to be that way. But again, like, people saying this are not wrestling fans. These are WWE fans, and they're protective of their brand, right? Um, So, there, you know, it's not about the wrestlers. I've said this multiple times, right? If you want a cape for everyone, for anyone or anything in pro wrestling, cape for wrestlers. Don't for corporations. Corporations will always inevitably let you down and you look like a dork. Stand up for the talent. They're the ones doing the stuff. Corporations will always be bullshit. And that goes for AEW too. You know, I will always be on the side of the of talent in this regard as opposed to anything else, you know. Now, as a quick aside, you know, because here we're talking about her going back to WWE. Why am I bringing this up? Well, it's because earlier this week, right, she was on a podcast and she said that one day on this podcast, a couple of days before her debut for AEW at Big Business at the TD Garden in Boston, Massachusetts, she says, one day I'm going to go back to WWE. Now, I think she didn't say it specifically on the podcast. She said it like in, in some cut content that the podcast then re-uploaded to the YouTube channel or whatever, right? They cut out stuff for the podcast, but then the extras go up on YouTube, which is fine. And so she was on, and she went and said, one day I'm going back to WWE, right? Now, in the context of her AEW debut, as I said, this was an ill-advised statement. One would even say it was dumb. You know, and I love Mercedes Moné. I think she's tremendous. But that was dumb. That was a dumb thing to say. We all know, nonetheless, that it's a truth. I think it's fair to assume that one day, even before she said it, it's fair to say that she was going to go back to WWE one day, right? We know this. But what she's doing right now is good for her. Good for her for multiple reasons. The first one being is that she's going out. She's out there proving herself to be a draw, to be a top player so that when she goes back to WWE and it's time to negotiate, she's got a lot more leverage behind her. And maybe at the same time, she's just getting her feeling out there and wrestling other people, doing other things, wrestling outside of WWE. You know, Sasha Banks is a pro wrestler and she loves to wrestle. She's a tape nerd. She's been into it, right? She's, for all intents and purposes, she's kind of one of us, right? So for her, this is all good. For the business side, for the growth side, the personal side of it, this is best for her. And it legitimately is. Picking up experience elsewhere, seeing how things operate elsewhere, that's all good for her. And it's best for fans too. You have to be completely sheltered and within a bubble to not see that this is a good thing for the wrestling business and for you as a fan. The status quo in pro wrestling is not good. There should always be shit happening, things being mixed around, mixed up. Kazuchika Okada coming into AEW, Will Ospreay coming into AEW. This kind of stuff is CM Punk going back to WWE after telling people that he'd never go back again and that he sued the company and whatnot. You know, this is exciting stuff. And you as a fan should be reveling in this, because it just keeps things exciting. But no, people dig in their heels then. And it's stupid. Because the opposite is so much more exciting. There should be more people moving from promotion to promotion easily, because it breaks the status quo. It keeps things fresh. It helps the wrestlers improve and up their game. And maybe even go through a transformation elsewhere. You know, Tama Tonga leaving New Japan is probably the best thing he could do for his career. He's done everything there. He's been stagnating. Why wouldn't he go anywhere else to try out anything else? And maybe reaffirm his love for wrestling. Raise it above kind of thing. Whatever. You know, raise up his own game. That's important for talent as well. But no, you know, because of this imaginary brand war that exists, because of these, you know, these old-timer grifters who still think that there's a Monday Night War going on, that we're still in 1997, right? Because of all these tribals, they can't see this. They can't see the benefits of this. And this is exciting. It's good stuff. So good for her. Great debut. I think this was a success. A home run, as they say in sports. So after she's done, we get Samoa Joe cutting a quick electric promo. Then we also get Adam Cole reading from a book. This is a pre-tape. Reading from a book to walk us through Wardlow's tale, right? He's reading from a book. A literal story for you dorks. Like, this could not be hammered home more clearly. I am reading a fairy tale right now. I have a book in my hands and I am reading from the book. For all the, you know, we can't tell stories or whatnot because you're too dense to see how AEW does tell its stories. Here, we're gonna shove this down your throat. We're gonna have Adam Cole be your caretaker. Sit you down. Would you like to hear a story? Let's tell you the story of Wardlow and how he got to this point. And he opens up an actual book. Storybook. God damn. I thought it was funny. Like, I don't know how intentional it was. But got me chuckling. Like, there you go, you dorks. And even before we go to the very first commercial of the night, the match starts. So we had a nice extended segment there. The match being Samoa Joe and Wardlow. Samoa Joe successfully retained his AEW World title against Wardlow. Of course, no big surprise there, but this was good. You know, they do big moves on each other. You got Wardlow doing the twisting dive off the top rope. Samoa Joe with the senton and the snap power bomb. Wardlow really heals it up, right? Where he fakes being hurt to rake at the eyes. And he even power bombs Joe using off of the ropes, like he doesn't actually lift him up. Though at some point I was like, I want to see this now. I want to see Wardlow lift Samoa Joe into a power bomb. I want to see this. We didn't see it. But Joe lands the Kikina clutch. And Wardlow passes out. Good little match. I gave it, what did I get? Here, I got my notes here. Let's move this away. 3.25 stars. Good little match. Energetic. Crowd was really into it. Crowd was hot for this. Good TV defense. As we thought, you know, wouldn't be a pay-per-view defense. Just a little TV defense on the way to Dynasty. Just get that out of the way. It's a good call. Good choice. So I was all into it. Swerve then comes out after the match. Tries to break through security to come after Joe. So we're once again, you know, setting the table here for the inevitable showdown at AEW Dynasty. Then we get a pre-tape. Earlier today, we have Alex Marvez interviewing the new Elite. And he refers to Kazuchika Okada as Okada, which Nicholas Jackson takes offense to and tells him to call him by the name on his passport, the Rainmaker Kazuchika Okada. I'm pretty sure the Rainmaker is not on his passport. Although, if it was, that suddenly makes Okada even cooler than he is. Then does that mean that I can get, like, a nickname added to my passport? Can I do that too? Let me know in the comments what should be my nickname. Matthews Jackson says Okada joined the Elite because they're the three best athletes in the world and they've been friends for a long, long time. Okada then tells Penta, Pac, and Eddie Kingston that he's coming for them and demands that Marvez sings happy birthday. No, he said, wish Nicholas or Matthew. Well, whose birthday was it? Was it Nick or Matt's? I think it was Matthew. Wish Matthew a happy birthday. And happy birthday. No, sing it. And I thought Okada here showed a whole bunch of personality. I don't remember his English. I mean, it's not as if I've heard Kazuchika Okada speak English all that much, over the years, but his English is pretty good. And that actually worked. And look, I thought this segment was fantastic. Okada, heel Okada is so tremendous. And it just keeps going within the match. I just want to point out, there's been a lot of talk around Kazuchika Okada's salary, the money that he's receiving for his contract, right? It was reported by Tokyo Sports to be the equivalent of $14 million US, something to that effect, right? Which is a ton of money, just an incredible amount of money, to the point that people are like, that doesn't seem right. that seems improbable. There's been semi-debunking, but without anyone coming out with any numbers. The Bucks here referred to the contract amount. They referred to the $14 million here because they do that, they sneak in some smark references, in their promos, and they referred to the $14 million here, which leads me to believe that that's not the real amount. Because knowing the Bucks and how they handle things, they will lean into internet rumors and speculation rather than, going into facts, because they're workers. That's what they should do. So, yeah, I this sort of closes the door, locks it up for me that the $14 million that Kazuchika Okada got is malarkey. Anyway, this led us into the six-man tag, the trios match between the Elite and Pac making his return, Penta El Zero Miedo, and Eddie Kingston. Of course, the Elite won here. A hell of an ensemble match, right? Like, when you break everything down here, put yourself in context. 5 years ago, before AEW came into the land. Okay, think about that. You're 5 years ago, and you've got Okada, the Bucks, Eddie Kingston, Pac, and Penta all together in a match. And that's a groundbreaking, kind of main event match somewhere, or at least a top of the card match somewhere. Someone who puts this together. And here we are in 2024, and we're getting this, and it feels hotter than if you had done it 5 years ago, arguably, because Eddie is a bigger star than he was back then. Penta is a bigger star as well. Pac, everyone is on. People have always loved the man who gravity forgot. They've always had. So, look. Disgusting. And we're getting this on a Wednesday night. And it's like, here we go. Trios. Wrestling rules. Anyway, I really liked this match. I think I liked it more than a lot of people did. It was your crazy spot match, but without two crazy spots, like without insane crazy spots, but just enough crazy spots for it to be the crazy spot match. And people were excited for Pac to get back to it, and he looked great. He looked motivated. And man, Okada, he just, excuse me, he looks like a star, a superstar. Right, he's coming through the Cody Vader, you know, and he's standing there, he's standing there at the top of the ramp in his robe, and you got the Okada Bucks flying from the cannons, and he's just standing there and he's looking out, and I got a shiver. I'm like, Christ, what a champ, what a pro, what a star this guy is. It's incredible how much AEW has nailed the debuts of their three huge signings. You know, Ospreay included in this. I may be too much in my head right now. Ospreay, Okada, Manet, all of their debuts have been fantastic. And the follow-up, this is why I'm very confident for the follow-up of Manet. Because the follow-ups for Ospreay and Okada have been pinpoint precise. They've been great. So, how could this not extend to Mercedes Moné moving forward? It wouldn't make sense if she suddenly, if she took a left turn and was like, no, then everything becomes the pits. These debuts have been handled magnificently. And he's so good in that he's so good as a heel. Yes, I know when he debuted, he was the rainmaker. He was the cocky heel. The guy was, you know, Silver Spoon and all that. I understand. But we haven't seen heel Okada in so long, outside of maybe last year when he was pissed off against all the young guys in New Japan, which was tremendous. His heel demeanor in this match was so good and so natural, right down to that spot where Eddie Kingston is trying to get the hot tag, and then, you know, the Bucks, well, one of the Bucks and Okada, you know, they trip the guys off the apron, their opponents off the apron to avoid the tag, right? And Okada just jumps up on the side, and he, you know, he extends an arm to Eddie for a tag, and he's teasing him, and I'm like, how natural is this coming to him? Like, it's as if he was a heel right up until before he left New Japan. It's tremendous. Yeah, this is what I mean. It's a good example of what we were talking about earlier about wrestlers moving around and trying new things. And maybe, you know, I speculated this last week, and I'm doubling down on it this week. I think this is just something he wanted to be a heel. He wanted to try something different, something new. He's been, you know, the irreproachable baby face, the face of the company, the hero for so long. And maybe it's like, hey, I'd like to try something else. And maybe he wanted to try something else in New Japan. And Gato was like, no, the world needs a rebel, not a heel Okada. Where was I going with this? Yeah, so basically, maybe, you know, moving around, going into another territory, you try something out. It gives you the possibility to freshen up, to try something different. And I think that's what Okada needed here. And good for him. I'm already feeling it. I think it's good. And I think it's only going to improve as it goes along. Look, people are still going to pop for the coin drop. People are excited to see Kazuchika Okada, one of the greatest of all time, one of the greatest champions in New Japan history, if not the greatest, you could argue, one of the top names in the history of of Japanese wrestling, of Puro. They're excited to see him. So he is going to get positive reactions. You know, I'll probably be going to the Dynamite show in my hometown in 2 weeks. You know, and he's probably going to be there. You think I'm not going to pop for the coin drop? You're out of your mind. What are we doing here? Double dives by Pac and Penta. Coming back to the match. Wheelbarrow faceplant by Matt Jackson, which was tremendous. A destroyer by Penta as well. But Nick lands a low blow on Eddie Kingston, which allows Okada to Rainmaker Eddie for the win. And after the match, Okada holds the Continental title aloft over the prone body of Edward Kingston, the King of Bums. And we're getting Eddie Kingston versus Okada next week for the Continental title. And that's tremendous. I thought they were, look, here I am saying to myself, I thought they were going to keep this for the pay-per-view. But AEW, and even just recently, right up until Revolution this year, you know, they'll have a match on Dynamite, but they'll have the bigger one for the pay-per-view, right? They'll have a rematch at the pay-per-view in a, like they did with FTR and the Blackpool Combat Club, right? They've done this a couple of times. John Moxley versus CM Punk is another good example. But it's the kind of thing that this is what you can do. This is what you can do. Like, you can do the Toronto match and have some kind of screwy finish if you want, whatever, you know. And then you have the rematch at the Pape, which I am completely fine about. Now, I don't know if this is for all three titles. It doesn't make sense if it does. I don't think it's for all three titles. I don't. I think they're going to... I think the Continental Crown is going to be defended solo next week. And if/when Okada wins, then we'll start splitting up the Triple Crown stuff, right? But then it has me wondering, how does this work in the context of, but I've been wondering this from the get-go, right? How is all of this going to work in the context of the Continental Classic that we were told was returning in 2024, which I'm looking forward to? Is this a question of, you know, the champion goes into the tournament and he tries to work his way to the finals, and if he doesn't, he can just lose the title without being in the finals, you know, kind of thing. Like, whoever wins the title. I dig that. I'm not going to lie. I think that's pretty fun. That's pretty cool. We'll see. But I gave this match 4 stars. I feel like I was higher on it than a lot of people. But I thought it was a lot of fun and was really good. And I thought the heel work here was tremendously good. And the... You know, this is the thing. Look at what's happening here. Everyone's like, oh, the Bucks are going to upstage Okada. They're going to... And it's the complete opposite. And I told you guys that this was not going to happen, and it's not happening. The Bucks look great. They're doing their job, which is to put the new guy over. The boss says, I want this guy to be a top guy, so do what you got to do. The Bucks are not taking over here. It's been tremendous, and the Bucks have been tremendous. I really like this incarnation of the Elite. I really do. It's good stuff. Back from commercial, we get a video package for Christian Cage and Adam Copeland, their match that they're having in Toronto next week, the I Quit match, which has the potential to, as they say, rock the house. Tony Schiavone's in the ring to interview Will Ospreay. Comes out, audience is into it. What a with what another, and he delivers another tremendous fiery promo. And, you know, he hypes up his match against against Danielson, you know, and all this. I want to say too many things at once. Pace yourself, Warren. Go through things. You can do it, but we'll go through the structure here that I have in my head, and then we'll. But I really did want to, I do want to say too much. I'm sorry. Stuff going on in my head right now. Don't you worry. But he hypes up his match against Danielson. Talks about the Tiger Driver 91 and how he delivered it on Kenny Omega, and everyone thought that it was the most violent and despicable wrestling move of all time. And he says he asked Danielson about it, where he does a move where he drops you on your head with no regard for your body. And Danielson says, was it worth it? He says, yeah, hell yeah, it was worth it. And then he talks about restoring the feeling. He says, I am the feeling, bruv, which gets a huge reaction from the crowd. Now, I've seen some discussion, some talk around the idea that mentioning restore the feeling on television in this context is highlighting the failure of AEW in 2023, right? Because we started talking about, and I think specifically it was MJF, talking about restoring the feeling because a lot of fans were criticizing the direction that AEW was taking in 2023, didn't recognize the company anymore, and the product was suffering because of it. So some people said that it's weird to talk about restoring the feeling on TV because you're kind of admitting that we fucked up, that the product used to be bad. Not unlike, you know, when Vince and company would, you know, trot themselves out onto Monday Night Raw and say, you know, we're going to do better. We're listening to you fans. You know, we know what you want. You know, essentially, you know, admitting the product is bad. But the difference here, again, that I have is that I don't have a problem with you coming out and admitting your product wasn't up to expectations, wasn't up to your expectations, fans, especially when it's such a fan-driven business like pro wrestling is. I don't have a problem with them coming out and saying, we haven't been serving you well. We fucked up and we're going to do better. And then you actually implement things to make things better, right? We've been talking about, you know, the restore the feeling has shown up on AEW once before, right? But I don't think anyone is really mad about it because you can feel that there have been legitimate steps taken to get out of that 2023 funk that they were in, where things weren't going their way, where they were putting on bad shows, including probably the worst Dynamite of all time. If you're actively changing things to make fans happy, I don't necessarily have a problem with it. Now, I think the reactions to this maybe have a little PTSD to WWE, towards WWE attached to this, because, you know, they'd say, we're going to make things better. You want new people, we'll get you new people. And who are the new people that they brought? You know, you remember that? The new people they brought up Lars Sullivan, you know, is debuting. You remember they had like broadcast, we're changing things up. Six new faces, Lars Sullivan and Lacey Evans and EC3 and Heavy Machinery. And you're like, this is not what we meant. Like, you're calling up these people, but these are not the people we want. You know, it's like, you know, and then shortly after that, you know, it's back to business as usual. Is that WWE would come out, do a thing where it's like, we'll be better. But then it really wasn't better. It kept on being Vince's show for Vince's likes. So in this case here, AEW has taken steps, has been changing things to make the show feel like the Dynamite that we all once knew and loved. So I have no issue with taking responsibility if you act on it. I don't have an issue. In fact, I find it kind of reassuring that, you know, we look back on 2023 as quite a few, you know, there's been some spokespeople, not Tony Khan himself, I don't think, but, you know, there's been some people who said, you know, 2023 was so, you know, we're coming back, where the wrestling is back, AEW is back. A lot of people leaning into that. There was clearly a consensus that things weren't working. Now things are working again. Like, this is what criticism should do. I don't have a problem with them taking responsibility for the missteps, for saying, look, we'll do better. And they've been doing better. So to me, it's a non-issue. Let's restore the feeling. I am the feeling. All right, let's go. Anyway, Ospreay has such big room energy. You know when you hear that? A wrestler has big room energy or has small room energy. You know, you hear that sometimes. Look, this is a textbook definition of big room energy. Right there. Ospreay comes in. He feels like a big deal. He looks like a big deal. And he's chanting to... He's getting people to chant. And his promo is tremendous. And he's drilling in. You know, fantastic stuff. You absolutely have to be one of two things. If you look at... Let me rephrase that. If you do not see Will Ospreay as a true-to-form, top-tier superstar, not in the WWE definition, the Oxford Dictionary definition. If you don't see him as a top-tier superstar, you're one of two things. You're incredibly new to pro wrestling. By the way, welcome. You're incredibly new to pro wrestling. Or you're bad faith. And I don't think there's room outside to argue that. You know, and when I say bad faith, I include in that people who just intrinsically don't like Will Ospreay for a bunch of reasons. Because even if you don't like Will Ospreay, I think you can't, I think I find it difficult for someone to not like Will Ospreay and still look at this and go, that wasn't very good. Because that was the opposite of not very good. I don't know. Good segment. Gets you excited for the Danielson match. And then look, they cut to a pre-tape with Deonna Purrazzo cutting a promo. And I thought that was extremely unfair. Deonna, whose promo work is not, you know, her top attribute, having to follow that, even though it is a pre-tape, having to follow that is just unfair. That is just completely unfair. She cuts a promo saying she's going to find a partner to team against Toni Storm and Mariah May, and talks about shoving shoes up people's asses. Look, you know, I am not going to fetish shame anyone. Let's move on. Jay White defeated Darby Allin. I'll tell you, look, Darby Allin is not like us. He's not like us. The bumps he took were insane for a guy whose back is stitched up, for a guy who's about to climb the most treacherous peak on planet Earth. What is he doing taking coffin drops on the apron? And like on the side of it, like, it's bonkers, man. That guy's nuts. 2 weeks after going through the glass. Jay White here in this match, I thought, was very good, and he worked up the I felt he was an excellent opponent for Darby, and those chops were fantastic. Like, Darby's chest was purple. I'm telling you, Darby Allin is not like us. He might not even be human at this point. Blade Runner gets the win. But this all led to, after the match, Jay White offers a handshake to Darby Allin, but it's a fake out. The Bullet Club Gold beat him down. Then they set him up to Pillmanize him, right? But then the Acclaimed come in and they're like, wait, what are you guys doing? No, no, no. Daddy Ass gives Jay White a scolding, but you can see this coming a mile away. My arms were raised into the air. I was saying, finally, 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 finally. Jay White cracked the chair on Daddy Ass. Billy Gunn falls to the mat. And we have ourselves a full turn. The Bang Bang Scissor Gang is a thing of the past. And it ain't too soon. Thank God. Because all of it stunk. And I thought it was a poor use of Jay White. Now, if we get out of this shit and we go to the pay-per-view and Bullet Club Gold get the win over the Acclaimed, mwah, we're going to unify these trios titles, whatever the fuck. I don't care. But hopefully, all of this Bang Bang Scissor Gang bullshit was to get what was a vehicle for Jay White to get back into the swing of things. Beats Darby Allin on his way to the mountains. And then hopefully they'll do it at Dynasty 2. Look, again, just for the new viewers, for the new listeners. Hi, how you doing? I appreciate and endorse the work from Max Caster and Anthony Bowens to get themselves over as the Acclaimed. They are truly a homegrown AEW success, one that you can point to as being over with the fans, and it works with the fans, and that's tremendous and good for them. And, you know, I think Anthony Bowens has tremendous upside as well, but it was not for me. It was never for me. I always thought it was kind of corny and stupid. And it annoyed me. And it annoyed me when they roped in my boy, Jay White, into this shit. Former IWGP world champion, not world, heavyweight champion. Former, a guy who's main evented the Tokyo Dome and Madison Square Garden. Sold out Madison Square Garden all by himself. And he's in a thing called the Bang Bang Scissor Gang. It's not for me. It's just not for me. So I applaud this. Couldn't have come too soon. And I hope the right decision is made where the Bullet Club Gold go over here. Anyway, they pillmanized Darby's ankle regardless. Jay White has dumped the geeks. This was a good, I thought it was a good angle. I thought it was well done. I think it's curious that we felt the need to write off Darby Allin from television. Because when, you know, pillmanizing usually does that, you know, but yeah, you know, I feel like curious. We felt the need to write him off when everyone knows he's going to climb Mount Everest. He was referring to it on promos just last week. So, you know, telling us I might not come back alive. You know, it's like, which is true, by the way. The, you know, this isn't like, you know, we're not, you know, he's not going on a hike. One of these easy hikes. I thought this was a great angle. Good stuff. I enjoyed it. Let's move on. I'm going long. Chris Jericho and Hook defeated the Gates of Agony. I don't know. This, I thought Jericho and Hook won with the Red Rum when the Red Rum Lion Tamer combo thing wasn't working. I don't know what they were. They were trying to be too cute here. I thought everyone here underperformed. Even the Gates of, I think the Gates of Agony are tremendous. I think they're great, but I think they underperformed here as well. Later on, Jericho challenges Hook. This is backstage. Challenges Hook to a match next week in Toronto out of respect, right? Where it's like, no, I respect you. Let's see if you can hold up against me. I don't understand why Chris Jericho is doing the Lion Tamer, the Lionheart stuff. I thought this was something that he was just going to do for his matches against the CMLL guys because that's how they all remember him back there. So if you're using footage of, if you're CMLL using footage, we talked about this on the Tatan thing, youtube.com/Mr. Warren Hayes, you should check that out. If you're CMLL and you're using footage from the AEW match, right, then you're using footage from the AEW match and you see, you know, Lionheart, Chris Jericho, Corazon de Leon, I guess. You know, you see that, you're like, oh, you can, you know, the connections are more easily made. And I don't know why he's doing this. People want to do the Judas thing. They want to sing along to Judas. Look, at this point, Jericho's, he's throwing things at the wall. He's going to see what sticks. This is essentially what it is. In the meantime, Hook is on TV. And I think he might beat Chris Jericho next week because Chris Jericho puts everyone over. This is, again, another thing we talked about in the little Titan thing over on YouTube. Has Chris Jericho lost a little bit of mystique in putting people over because he's put so many people over without regaining any heat? Because here's the thing, is that people are... There's a lot of people who hate Chris Jericho for reasons, but would never accept him to start winning again because then they'd riot. But in the way that Chris Jericho is used, he need to win some big matches to get some heat back so that beating Chris Jericho feels significant. Now I think it's kind of watered down. You know, now I think people that he works with, like Hook right now, maybe it's not as successful as it was because all he's been doing is losing. That's been his entire thing for months now at this point. But you know, someone recently, I can't remember who, told me, they saw, and I apologize for not remembering, but they saw Chris Jericho as the first of the AEW dads, right? New Japan Pro Wrestling has dads, you know, guys who are past their prime. They'll never be stars again. They'll never main event again. Hanma, Togi Makabe, Yuji Nagata, Taguchi. Like, there's a bunch of people right now, like in the company, who are, they're referred to like as the New Japan dads. There's guys that come in for these curtain jerker matches, these undercard matches, or singles matches to put over the younger guys or the stars or whatever. They're not there to put on classics. They're not there to put on top tier matches. Maybe Jericho is entering that territory where he's the first AEW dad in that regard, if that makes sense. And I kind of like that comp and it makes sense. And I think it's a good spot for him. Anyway, a nothing match. If you're interested, I gave Jay White and Darby Allin, forgot to say, I gave it 4 stars out of 5, 2.5 for the tag team match here. Rene Paquette is interviewing Kyle O'Reilly backstage. He talks about his recovery, how he couldn't pick up his daughter because of his neck, and those were the darkest days of his life. But he calls out Brian Keith for a match. Roderick Strong arrives with the Kingdom. And says he respects and loves Roddy, and if he wants to do this on his own, he can do this on his own. So they're leading into a feud here. So right now, for Collision this Saturday. We've got one match announced, and it's Kyle O'Reilly, his return match against Brian Keith. Not exactly a star-studded lineup, but it, you know, it's a start. It's a start. We get a video package for Riho and Willow Nightingale. Then Riho is stretching backstage, and Mercedes Moné appears to wish her luck. We go to break. Again, I got to raise a little flag here. That's a very WWE thing. Is this a little, do we have a little peppermint influence here? Maybe a little on the negative side? Maybe on the side that we don't care about? Maybe this is the kind of thing that we don't want peppermint to do? Just say, hey, look, I don't want to sound like I'm bitching. I'd probably bitch more about it if I wasn't an hour 20 into this review. But I have to raise the flag. I got to point it out. This is a very WWE thing to do in the as far as the production aspect goes. Mm-hmm. And then the main event, Willow Nightingale defeated Riho, snapping her, right? Riho was on winning streak, right? Wasn't she? I thought this was really good. I gave this match a 3.75 stars. I thought that was, you know, a classic strength versus speed match, and I thought it worked really well. I enjoyed the hell out of this match. I don't know. Is it just me? Again, I feel like I'm on the high end of the spectrum here. Riho lands a really gnarly Northern Lights suplex on Willow. Like, you know, you could tell the size and the strength of Willow was playing against Riho here. Willow lands the pounce, some good back and forth, including a snapdragon by Riho on the apron, but Willow gets the win with the babe with the powerbomb, which is, look, good little match. I enjoyed it tremendously, and you know, a lot of people were like, why is this the main event? Why do you think the woman you had, let me say that again, you had the hint at the beginning of the show when Mercedes Moné said, hey, Willow Nightingale, we've got unfinished business. Now you're debuting Moné. You want to bring her back. Might as well bring her back at the main event, right? And you show that she's going to be present, that we're not done, because she shakes Riho's hand. And she goes, okay, I'll be keeping an eye on the match. And, oh, okay, there we go. So Moné is still around. That's why this was the main event. I didn't think this was too bad. Was it the greatest main event in Dynamite history? No, but it was all about the angle afterwards where the lights go out. Julia Hart and Sky Blue appear. They attack Willow. And Moné makes the save. But in the aftermath of the fight here, I would say that it was a little, you know, Willow raised her hand, right? She was happy to see Mercedes, and she raised her hand, and Mercedes was kind of like, yeah, cool. And I think this was purposeful, like, cause this, honestly, I was expecting Moné to turn on her, like right there, to just like plant her into the ground. Cause that's what she does. That's what Sasha Banks does. That's what Mercedes Moné does. She's a backstabber. She has a move literally called the backstabber. Like, that's her thing. You can't trust her. But they, you know, they want to stretch out the babyface glow, I guess, for a bit. But at some point, she's going to turn heel. And, you know, I don't think we're heading towards Mercedes Moné versus Julia Hart for the TBS title. Because the trajectory so far seems to be Willow and Julia Hart for the TBS title. Probably at Dynasty. And if you ask me, somehow Mercedes Moné screws it up for Willow Nightingale, and Julia Hart retains. I think, as it stands, the first order of business for Mercedes Moné is, like, psychologically speaking, I think this would make more sense, is not to chase down titles. It's to handle business with the women who, with the woman who injured me for months and took me out of the business for months. Doesn't that make more sense? I think that's where we're going with this, right? You'd think so. That would make more... If I'm Mercedes Moné, I'm out for blood, and then I'm out for titles. So it gives them time to figure out what to do with Toni Storm in the meantime and whatnot. Because the title she's going for is the world title. What are we doing? We're not having Mercedes Moné run after secondary titles. What are we doing here? Oh, it can elevate it. No. You know, you don't bring her in and have her chase secondary titles. That's all there is to it. There you have it. That's where we're at right now in the world of professional wrestling's AEW and the show they call Dynamite, which was what a wordy outro here, Warren. That was the March 13 edition of Dynamite. I hope you enjoyed this review. Leave a like or a subscription, or why not both, if you're watching this on YouTube right now, youtube.com/Mr. Warren Hayes. And if you're listening to this on your favorite podcast application, well, a little love there as well. 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, 5-star ratings on Spotify, etc., etc. I'll be back soon. Yeah, your best bet to not miss any Warren Hayes content these days is to subscribe to the YouTube channel. Again, I'm not quite sure when I'm returning with the podcast per se, but I'm working through it, putting things together. You'll be the first to find out. Follow me on Blue Sky, join the Discord. Thank you very much for being here, and I'll see you next time.